This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:47 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Sharad Kutan.
Yeah, we were just discussing what would happen and how do you prepare for a global financial crash? Would you start, you know, buying canned food at this point in time? Is that what we're saying?
Become a prepper.
No, and
it's like,
you know,
doomsday warriors.
Yeah, and this is a question that, you know, kind of, you know, popped into my head when we were talking about the Deutsche Bank problem. Is if everybody knows that there's a problem now, can it in fact be averted? Can this crash be averted and the risks that it's posing to the global financial system?
I think confidence is the biggest problem for policymakers right now, because once you admit that there is a problem, people will be rushing out the door and would actually exacerbate the collapse. Not that I'm saying that it's good to sweep things under the carpet. You know, with the Lehman problem in 2008, people didn't know what hit them until it happened, right? Could this be the same thing right now? Actually, on the eves of a lot of crisis, policymakers actually say everything, usually they will go like everything is A-okay until it happens, and that's when they change the tack.
Yeah, so right now a couple of red flags are being raised, so hopefully we might be better prepared for any kind of mega crash.
Yeah, and also talking about preparation, right? You are asking about canned foods and things like that. In fact, a lot of people bought gold at that point in time, and people are again starting to buy gold right now because gold has hit highs in recent years, right? Recent years highs are $1,300 per ounce. But you can't eat gold. You can't put it in your car, right? Well, it wouldn't feed you. So perhaps canned food may be a better
what
buy.
What you need is a gold can opener. So, you know, serves the purpose.
Actually, you can eat gold if it's battered down very thin. It, in fact, is used to kind of...
Gold top leaf?
Gold, yeah, very thin. Leaf. You can put it on food and you can eat gold. But
Transaction costs come into mind.
Yeah, you don't have to spend a lot of your time beating it down. But yeah, I mean, what is a good store of value? If money is no longer a good store of value, we've seen the ringgit, you know, go down so rapidly. We know that, you know, whatever you held, you know, suddenly was worth 20% less than what it was worth before. And so money isn't a great store of value. So what is?
Food, nourishment, happiness, spiritual enlightenment.
Right. You get all sides of business on The Morning Run. 7:50 right now, Malaysia Airlines says it's considering having some flights depart out of KLIA 2. And this is because of a 33 ringgit price difference in fees. Now, this move has created some debate. There are people who are quite against this. So it's been criticised by several industry executives and travellers, saying that this is a move that's not good. However, Peter Bellew, on the first day of his job on July 1st, said that part of his move forward is to cut the airline's costs. So this is all part of the cost-cutting for Malaysia Airlines as well.
You know, a few years ago, back in the day, going back to the financial crisis, actually, I was laid out of my job and I went traveling. And I guess at that time, the budget travel revolution was just taking off. And I flew from Darwin to Singapore for about $9 Aussie and from Singapore back to KL for about 50 ringgit, right? 50 ringgit on Tiger Air, I think. And now if you look at the passenger service charge that KLIA is charging, 65 ringgit for international destination, 9 ringgit for domestic. That Singapore KL flight, that's 65 ringgit exceeded the cost that I paid for that flight back from Singapore to KL. And so Peter Bellew, taking over from Christoph Müller as the CEO of Malaysia Airlines, did his maths, and it kind of worked out that way. 33 ringgit difference between KLIA and 1 and 2.
Well, you know, Julian, you might be an exception. Most people who lose their jobs end up making curry puffs in their kitchen and trying to sell them.
You know, the budget travel does good things to your wallet. I didn't go around in business class or first class.
But, you know, this 33 ringgit difference, for the critics of this move, they might say, look, you know, this is really bad. You're splitting focus. You're trying to operate out of two terminals. But for Malaysia Airlines, Peter Bellew, he's saying 33 ringgit is over $8 per customer. And most airlines' average profit is less than $8 per customer. So it's a huge difference. It makes a difference between profit and loss.
And you're a passenger. I mean, what difference does it make? You go to one terminal or the other, right? I mean, does it really make a difference to you if a brand is split over two terminals?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
But I mean, if you were a business traveler, you might, if you're traveling around with some of your clients, and you might need that branding, that prestige to go with it. But I think that is a small consideration, because even businesses today are thinking about cutting costs.
And if you think of KLIA too, now that the trains link both the airlines, and it's not an abominable, you know, trip from KLIA 1 to LCC 2, what difference does it make? It really doesn't.
Unless KLIA 2 is positioned as a low-cost carrier terminal, as LCC 2. And that, I think, would be a problem if Malaysia Airlines, as a full-service flight, operates out of KLIA 2 / LCC 2.
Again, we come back to the question of whether this should be a national airline or this should be a commercial entity. Because if it is the latter, then they should be allowed to make business decisions on their own without having to busy themselves with ideas like, oh, we got to protect the image of the country, right? We just go out there and try to make money.
Or even the image of the brand. So what does the brand stand for? Good quality service, maybe, which can be provided for even in a budget terminal. And the LCC 2, I mean, KLIA 2 is not bad. It's not bad as a term.
So, which is really puzzling why the Malaysian Association of Tour and Travel Agents and the National Chamber of Commerce and Industry in Malaysia are opposing this plan to move Mars's, some of Mars's flights or MARB's flight from KLIA 1 to KLIA 2. Why would they want to oppose this?
Well, I guess there must be a backstory there. We'll have to find out more about that. But moving on to other news, Kwek Kon-sian is the youngest... Oh, Sean. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Kwek Kon-sian.
The youngest son of Tan Sri Kwek Leng Chan. He will assume a new position in the Hong Leong Group. So according to some filings with Bursa Malaysia's, Kon-sian has resigned as a non-executive director in Hong Leong Group and also Hong Leong Capital.
I think this is part of the succession issue that's going on, not only in Malaysia, but over the region as well. People are always asking questions, putting it to Robert Kwok, saying what is his succession issue. I think he says something to the effect of he might not die. No, don't quote me on that.
I'm not sure he said that.
Mean ever?
In Korea, you know, the Chaebols are also trying to handle their succession issue. It's a nightmare over there because there are all these backstabbing and family feuds going on. But here in Malaysia, I guess the process is pretty smooth. Kwek Lin Chan is 75 years old. The other one is Tay Hong Piao, or founder of Public Bank. He's about 86. So he, I think, also needs to think about what will happen to his shareholding. And these are the founders of the last remaining private banks in Malaysia, ethnically Chinese-owned, and a lot of questions about what would happen to the future.
So Kon-sian is in his mid-30s, about 35, 36.
Very young.
But he's also had some dealings in e-commerce. I remember reading about his online shopping portal. What was it called?
Gem5. Yeah. 1.5 million visitors monthly, about 1,000 merchants, 2,500 brands competing with the likes of Lazada in Malaysia.
Okay. What about companies like this, banks like this, you know, professionalizing? Isn't that something that shareholders want? I mean, are they so concerned about the genetic link between, you know, a brilliant founder and successes? I mean, is that an issue for them, or really just getting people with experience and coming in with the requisite skills?
I think it's certainly what Bank Negara wants, because if you institutionalize the way your bank is managed, then you also reduce part of that systemic issue that's going on with the global financial institutions.
Private equity firm CVC Capital Partners has made a $1.1 billion buyout offer to Nirvana Asia, which is the largest funeral services firm in Asia. And now they're kind of, this deal really shows that they're banking or betting on the fact that the rising wealth in the Asian region will increase the demand for luxury funerals.
So you guys, how much would you pay for a property? Would you, you know, pay? Sure,
you like did, affordable housing.
You're a new property owner. What is the price per square foot that you would pay?
About 15 million, Sharad?
Per square foot. It was like in the range of 530, I think, you know. And I think it depends on the neighborhood. But
530, yeah, that's very precise and specific.
Yeah, because
I'm revealing
homeowner. Something about my own choices here. But yeah, I mean, that would be, I guess. So how many square feet do I need for a grave? Is that what you're looking towards?
Well, they are selling plots for... let's say a 216 square foot burial plot. That's a double lot of possibly for husband and wife. That's the size of possibly a small apartment that's going for 36,000 or 37,000 apparently, and that's about just under 200 ringgit per square foot. And the other one, the smaller one, 65 square feet burial single lot. 25,000 ringgit, that's 385 per square foot. So you can say that while they are a bereavement care specialist, they're really a very profitable property owner because they don't even spend a lot on infrastructure.
Well, you know, you could have everything. So part of the services that Nirvana provides, everything from the burial plot to... hundreds of thousands of gold-plated caskets to, you know, anything that you want. So I have to say, the saying, nothing certain but death and taxes, they're in a recession-proof business. But
yeah, they are, totally. And one business risk would be that if science made human beings immortal, that would be... Yeah, right.
But okay, let's come back to the buy-off.
Have you guys heard
of
the Gilgamesh Project? It's really to make human beings live forever. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's about Noah's Ark, wasn't the flood? Yeah. But okay, let's come back to the buyout offer. Why would they sell? I mean, who is CVC and why would they sell a profitable company and that's doing so well?
Well, I think it's a very good question. CVC is a private equity company and they always go around looking for deals. And the reason why the owners would want to sell is that they want funding, they want to make profits. They've built a business, they've sort of incubated business to an extent where if they can't get enough funding, they would not be able to expand further. And some of them may be just as simple as making a good killing out of it and therefore selling a part of their stake to do that.
A good killing from the bereavement firm?
Exactly. Thank you.
Coming up to the 8 o'clock news at the top of the hour, we've got the breakfast grill. After that, Ibrahim Saini speaks to Suresh Sidhu, CEO of E.co, which is a telecoms tower firm fast growing in Asia, especially in Myanmar. Find out more after the news bulletin next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.